Hello friends, welcome to Running and Fitness with Raj. This show will bring you exciting and interesting guests and give you specific and actionable advice on your running, fitness, and general health. I am delighted to welcome our guest for today's show, JF Esculier from Vancouver in Canada. JF is the leader of research and development at the Running Clinic, which has a presence in 15 countries. He is also the clinical assistant professor at the British Columbia University, and he is also the founder and physiotherapist of MoveMed. I came across JF's work earlier this year through Brody Sharp's Run Spotters program podcast, and listeners may recollect that we also had Brody in an earlier episode. JF, as his background and his qualifications tells you, has extensive knowledge on running shoes, types of shoes, how shoes are related to running form, injuries with specific focus on running injuries and how they are correlated to the type of shoes that you wear. And, you know, we haven't done a podcast or an episode which is focused on this. So I'm absolutely delighted to have such an expert in this field joining us. So welcome to the podcast, JF.
Thank you, Raj. Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be on your podcast.
Okay. So let's start with, you know, a little bit of your background in your own words and how you got interested in this field and, you know, your journey so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I started as a physio in 2009 when I graduated from the University of Ottawa here in Canada. And I started working in a private clinic with a lot of runners. And that's how I got involved in running, because before that, I would not run unless I had a ball to run for. I used to be a soccer player. And I started running after nothing, basically, in 2009 and working with a lot of runners and injured runners in the clinic. And I had a lot of questions, because people were asking me those questions, you know, like, oh, what kind of shoes should I be wearing? Or what do I do with this specific injury? And I always had this kind of type of personality where I like to find the answers based on science and facts. And I couldn't find the answers a lot of time. So I decided to get involved in research. So in 2012, I decided to do more research. So I did a master's and my PhD on running injuries, especially at the knee. And there's also a component of biomechanics and footwear and all that stuff. And then I moved after that to the west part of Canada, Vancouver, where I am now. I live close to Vancouver now, but it's still in the same area. And I did some research on running and knee osteoarthritis, still about, you know, how can we keep those older people running? Is running bad for your knees? What kind of shoes should they be wearing, and that kind of stuff. So I'm still a practicing physiotherapist. I've been doing a lot of research. And I like that combination. And I've also been teaching a lot with the Running Clinic. So you mentioned that, Raj. So the Running Clinic, we're teaching in 15 different countries on running injuries to healthcare professionals and to the general public. So I really enjoy that combination of working as a clinician, but also doing the research and teaching.
Okay, excellent. That's a very useful overview of your background. So before, you know, diving deeper into the specific aspects around running footwear, that is, can we start with you giving us an overview of some of the common type of running injuries that you encounter, and to the extent that they are related to the choice of footwear?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the different types of injuries, it depends on what kind of runner you are. And for the listeners, if you are a distance runner, if you like running marathons, half marathons, even the 10K distance is considered long distance running, right? And even the 5K is considered long distance running. Sure. We see a lot of knee injuries. We see about 50% of long distance running injuries are at the knee. And that's what basically drove my interest in the knee, because I was seeing a lot of injured runners with knee injuries. And if you go into people who are doing more track work, so faster runners, shorter distance runners, they get a bit more injuries to their lower leg. So more the Achilles tendon or the foot, stress fractures and things like that. So the injuries are different based on what kind of population you belong to. But the question, you know, how are the shoes related to that? It's a question that I guess research hasn't been really able to answer yet, I will say. But the trend right now, the tendency is that there's not a single shoe that it's putting more at risk of injury than any other one. And that's kind of how I use the shoes also when I teach and when I practice with my clients is, you know, the shoe is not the cause of your injury. It can be helpful to treat the injury, but it's likely not the cause of it. Because regardless of what shoe you have, unless it's a very worn out shoe with holes and a lot of friction everywhere that will cause you blisters and things like that, otherwise you are adapted to that shoe. And if it's a shoe with more or less cushioning, you can be adapted to it and it will not cause your injury. So right now, we cannot say based on the science that a specific kind of shoe will cause more injuries.
Okay. So can you just tell us your thoughts on the whole wide range of running shoes that we see out there, right? I mean, right from barefoot running to minimalist shoes to the, you know, the more common cushioned shoes. So just take us through your views on the same.
Yeah. So when I was saying that no shoe is causing injuries, I will also say that no shoe is preventing injuries, right? So, okay. And that's an important part, because when we're talking about the different types of shoes we see on the market, so you have the minimalist shoe that's it seems like a trend for us, you know, in the Western world, because we're used to those very technologic shoes. So a minimalist shoe is a shoe that has almost no cushioning, that is very flexible, that is light, and that lets your foot move, basically. That kind of shoe is the shoe that a lot of people are scared of here in our part of the world, because they're used to the more cushioned shoe. And the more cushioned shoe with the technologies that a lot of manufacturers promote, unfortunately, is based on no science. It doesn't prevent injuries. Whether you have a motion control shoe that would have a specific density on the inside part of the shoe, so that it's controlling your foot movement, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change anything in terms of your risk of injury. So the different types of shoes on the market, Raj, obviously you have those barefoot shoes and minimalist shoes all the way to the highly cushioned shoes. And I don't know how much of these you have in India, but in the Western world, we have a lot of the shoes called the Hokas. That's one of the major brands. You have those?
We have, people wearing Hokas, although I guess probably Nike and Adidas in that order are probably the most. Nike, Adidas, and Asics would be probably the three most popular ones in India.
Okay, yeah. So you have that full spectrum of no cushioning at all the way to a massive amount of cushioning. And the question here is, like, do shoes cause injuries? And I said no, but do shoes prevent injuries? And the answer is also no. So it's not because you have more cushioning under your foot that you will prevent any kinds of injuries. So shoes change the forces that you're applying to different body parts. And if you're applying different forces to different body parts, you may be more likely to get different injuries based on the different kind of shoe that you're wearing. So basically, my take on those different shoes is we don't need to have that much cushioning. We don't need to have many technologies in our shoes, because they don't prevent injuries. And that's where it gets tricky for the consumer, for the runner, because they go to a running store and they're showed, some marketing arguments about how this shoe and that shoe can help them. But in the end, there's no research supporting that at all, right? So my philosophy on it is, if you are already used to a big shoe, you're not injured and you don't want to perform better, you know, keep your shoe that has more cushioning, and that's totally fine. Because if you change it, you might get injured because you're changing the forces on your body and so on. But if you're new to running, or if you want to perform better, well, the key point is probably to go to less cushioning and less technologies, just to make sure that you run a certain way, because shoes do change the way we run. And that can be helpful in the future to build better running mechanics and also to be more efficient when you run.
Okay, so coming to the, you know, a related question is then, what about barefoot running? I mean, that's also quite popular, especially on the road, right? I mean, a lot of people do that. So where does barefoot running fit into this?
Yeah, I mean, barefoot running, if you look at the origins of the human evolution, obviously we're adapted to running barefoot in a way, but in our modern world, we're not so adapted anymore, I guess, because we're used to wearing a lot of cushioning and shoes and so on. But the benefits of barefoot running, I think, are there. I wouldn't tell everyone that they should be running barefoot. Actually, I rarely tell that to a lot of people. I tell them, you know, if you did just even 5 minutes of barefoot running twice a week, that could be helpful to make your feet stronger, to help with your running mechanics, just to run better and to become more efficient in your running. So that's one advice that I like to tell runners, is just do it max, you know, as much as 5 minutes twice a week. If you want to do more, you can, but you don't have to necessarily.
Okay, so basically the advantage for a person who otherwise uses, let's say, a regular running shoe, cushioned or less cushioned or more cushioned, doesn't matter, but barefoot running does help in developing certain aspects of your feet better. So that's what you are saying. So just as more like one can think about it like a drill or something like that, right? Which you may do at the end of a session, or in this case, probably even at the beginning. So one question which a lot of athletes in general, not just runners, don't pay a lot of attention is the footwear they use outside of their sport or running, right? I mean, and most of the day we are actually wearing another kind of footwear. Now, can you help us with how do you think about these shoes, which is what your feet is, you know, using for most of the day compared to an exercise or a running shoe?
Yeah, it's all about adaptation, Raj. It's the tricky part is to be able to not overload your system with your everyday life and your sport. So if you're saying, you know, I'm training a lot right now, I'm doing a lot of speed work, and I told you when we started that if you're a short distance runner, you're training on the track, you're loading your feet a lot, maybe you'll feel like in everyday life, you may want a little bit more protection just to make sure you're not overloading. So that could be one attitude to have. But the other one could be also, you know, if I adapt my feet and if I make them as strong as possible, I will be able to tolerate my fast trainings better and my feet will be stronger. So in that sense, what I recommend is to have the same philosophy for your everyday shoes as what you would have for your running shoes. Although in some cases, you know, if you like to go outside and run with more cushion, it could still be valuable to have less cushioning in your everyday shoes. Right. So it depends what's available in your area too. Sometimes they're harder to find in shoes with less cushioning for everyday life, but they're certainly valuable to make your feet stronger.
Okay. So let me ask you a related question, which is linked to, the running shoes or your exercise shoes as well. Do you recommend people keeping the same type of shoes or do you recommend them rotating or mixing a variety of shoes, in the sense, you know, should people be using a mix of more minimalist shoes to the, you know, slightly more cushioned shoes? Is there a benefit one way or the other?
That is the common belief, and I would say it is the culture here, at least. You know, a lot of runners, they have one shoe with more cushioning for their longer runs. They have a racing flat shoe for their speed intervals, and so they rotate also those different shoes during the week. However, there's no science on that. Again, that's another topic where we have no research. There's actually just one study that at one point tried to look at the injury rates in different runners and look at their shoes and how many shoes they were using. And then they said those who were using 3.6 pairs of shoes, they came up with that number, tended to be injured less. So, you know, that study is not, it's not something that I would rely on, because it's a single study that's in terms of the design of it, it doesn't allow you to conclude really. So it would need to be tested in another study. But basically, if I was selling shoes, I would tell you, yeah, of course, there's a study that said you need to have more shoes, so you should buy more. But in the end, the philosophy that I have is more about variety overall to help prevent injuries. And it's not necessarily to buy more shoes, but it could be to use the same shoe but vary the surfaces. So run a bit on the road, run a bit on the trails, run a bit on the grass, and you vary the stresses on your body to basically load different structures and not always load the same structures. And that could allow you to increase your volume easier, for example. And I'm just taking the example of ultra trail runners, right? The reason why ultra trail runners can run 100 kilometers or even 100 miles and never do that in their training is because of the variety. If you try to do that on the road, you'll get injured because of the repetition of it. You're not adapted to that much. So having some variety for me can be different ways. If you can't afford to buy 5 different pairs of shoes or 3.6 different pairs of shoes, just vary your surfaces with all the same pair of shoes.
Okay. The one question again related to this is most of the runners that I know of have multiple pairs of shoes, and they don't typically use a single pair, at least for consecutive sessions, for whatever reason. Is it more than a practice? Can somebody, just to take this example forward, get away with one running shoe till it kinds of, you know, runs its mileage?
I would say yes. And the reason why a lot of runners do rotate these different shoes, and that could be sometimes they just buy 4 pairs of the same model, right? And they run one day with each. And the rationale for that is they want the cushioning to come back to its normal level, and they need to leave it more time between the runs. That's the rationale. But if you go with the philosophy of being a little bit more minimalist in the kind of shoes you're wearing, you don't have those technologies and cushioning and whatever properties that need to come back to their normal. For example, the shoes that I'm wearing are very minimalist. And you know, even if I go for 2 runs with just 2 hours in between, there's no difference because there's no cushioning properties that need to come back to their baseline. So it depends on the kind of shoes you're wearing, maybe. But otherwise, this is another marketing argument for me that's made to sell more shoes.
Oh, okay. So another question is related to pronation, right? I mean, the different shoes are marketed on that basis. What is your take on that?
Great question, Raj, because that's something that I hear a lot. And you look at the research, first of all, pronation is not a problem, right? Pronation is a normal movement of the foot and of the ankle to help absorb and dissipate forces during the impact of running. And that's why pronation exists. If you did not have any pronation, you lose that capacity to dissipate forces when you're running. So you get more forces going up your leg, at your knee, your hip, and your back, for example. Right. So pronation is necessary. Now, is there a link between pronation and injuries? The answer is no. So it's not because you're pronating more than someone else that you will get more injuries. That's a myth. And then the other point that comes back to your question is if I'm pronating more, should I control it or should I wear a shoe that's addressing this pronation? Well, if we consider that pronation is not a cause of injury, then technically you do not need a motion control shoe to control your pronation because it's not a problem. And there's a few studies on that that have actually looked at, you know, what's happening if I take someone with pronation and I give them a motion control shoe versus I give them a more stability shoe or a neutral shoe and look at the incidence of injuries. And they were not able to prevent injuries by giving people a motion control shoe if they had pronation. So again, that's another thing that was created by the running shoe market, maybe with a good intention at first, but that research has found, and that was like over 10 years ago now that these studies came out, and they found no evidence of prevention if we actually do that. So for that reason, I tell people, you know, first of all, you don't need that much cushioning, so you could reduce your cushioning. Second, you don't need that many technologies because they don't prevent injuries.
And injuries are more related to the traditional factors, which is how fast you are, you know, increasing your mileage or your other aspects of your running form. That's what you are saying. And in which case, it makes a lot of sense that shoes per se, and that's been a theme that you also highlighted earlier in the conversation. So are you saying that then runners generally do not need any sort of support?
I would say yes, but again, it depends on your adaptation, right? So if I take the example of someone who grew up being barefoot, who is used to play, you know, soccer barefoot on the street, like, you know, we see in some parts of the world, and they're running barefoot and they're used to it, they don't need any stability, they don't need any cushioning. They're fully adapted to that. If you take another example of someone who has always been wearing cushioning and supportive shoes, if all of a sudden you tell them that they don't need it, then they might get injured if they get shoes without any cushioning or support because they're not adapted to it. So for me, a key point is, if you are a runner who is starting to run, you should start with less cushioning and less technologies so you can adapt your body to it, increase gradually, and you will adapt to those shoes. You don't need those technologies. If you are a young runner, or, you know, you're a teenager, or even for your kids, for the listeners, they don't need support. They don't need those technologies. So try to make these young people wear very simple shoes so that their feet adapt and become stronger. And I'm quite biased and convinced that in the future, they will have less risk of injury because of their shoes if they have strong feet.
Okay, so this leads, this is a good segue to the question I wanted to ask next, which is just take us through the factors which somebody should consider when they are buying a pair of shoes. Let's say buying a pair of running shoes.
So the different factors you need to consider when you're buying a pair of shoes is, first of all, what are you wearing now, right? What's your current pair of shoes? Second is, what's your objective? And third is, what is your adaptation level, right? So going back to the number one, what are you wearing now? If you're wearing traditional shoes, cushion shoes, then you want to keep that in mind for your next pair because you don't want to have too big of a difference with the new shoe that you're buying.
Sure.
If you're already used to a more minimalist shoe, then it's kind of the same thing where you don't want to necessarily go to a maximalist shoe because you would be shifting forces and you might get at risk of injury. The second question that I said is what's your objective? If your objective is just to run for health and be happy and just for your mental health and your physical health, you don't want to perform, you don't want to beat your times, then I would say, you know, don't change your habits too much. Just keep whatever you're using now. It's working well. If your objective is to improve your times, then you need to go to a shoe that is lighter, that's for sure. So you need less weight, because the more weight you're carrying, the more oxygen you're going to be using. So that's a major factor in performance. Now, you need to go to a shoe that has less weight. Typically, that would be a more minimalist shoe. And then you need to adapt to that. So there's a transition period needed for that. And the third question I asked was, well, what are your adaptations? Like, have you always been protecting your feet versus, no, I grew up barefoot. I'm still barefoot at home. I do lots of barefoot stuff. Then you will be able to transition your shoe faster if that is the case. And maybe there's a last question that I would need to address that would be, you know, are you injured or not? And if you're not injured, again, you know, you don't want to perform better. You're used to your current shoes and you're not injured. Don't change your habits. Just buy something very similar to what you're wearing now. However, if you are injured, then obviously it depends where the injury is. It depends, is it a recent injury? Is it an injury that's been there for months or years? In which case, the recommendations will be different. So there's different factors to consider.
And what is the sort of mileage that one can run in a pair of running shoes? Is there a thumb rule that you use? Obviously, whatever be the thumb rule, one should periodically check for, too much of wear and tear. I get that. But is there a number that you work with?
I would say no, for the simple reason that if I come back to the marketing arguments, the companies will tell you typically between 600 and 800 kilometers before changing your shoes. That's the standard that they suggest based on the cushioning properties of the shoe. Now, the wear and tear, like you said, if it's unevenly worn out, then yes, you need to change it. Comfort, if you don't find them comfortable anymore, then why would you keep them? But the main point for me is more, if you have less cushioning, let's say you have quite minimalist shoes, your chances of wearing out or deforming the cushioning aspect of the shoe is really low. And I know a lot of runners who run with very minimalist shoes, barefoot type shoes, for 2,000 kilometers, right? Because there's nothing that can be compressed on one side or the other of the shoe and that can deform the shoe, right? The reason why these people change their shoes is because they have a hole in the shoe, but not because the shoes are compressed more on the inside part of the outside part, which is what's happening when you have more cushioning.
Okay. And so you don't prescribe going by, the traditional metrics of, let's say, 600 to 800 kilometers and things like that. I think what you are saying is, taking a very, very practical approach to this. So I want to just move on to injury prevention now, which is another, area of your expertise. You touched upon some of the common injuries that you see, which is, typically knee injuries for the endurance athletes, to more the maybe Achilles and calf and things like that for the faster runners. But just take us through some of the key injury prevention methods that you recommend, and then we can go into some specific protocols to follow in case you get injured, with specific focus on, let's say, some of the common ones like plantar fasciitis, Achilles injuries, or knee pain. So let's start with the prevention methods.
Yeah. So Raj, the main advice that I give is obviously listen to your body, and everybody is different. We hear sometimes in terms of training, that you shouldn't be increasing by more than 10% per week your weekly mileage. But that's based on nothing. There's even studies that have tested it. And some people do 10% increase versus 20% increase, and there's no difference in injury rates. And that's for different reasons, obviously, because it's very individual. your capacity, your personal capacity to increase your mileage will depend on how do you feel? What's your general health? You know, even if you're going through a stressful period at work or in your family, your body will not be able to recover as well from maybe that 10% that usually you would be totally fine. So that capacity to increase your mileage really depends on a lot of factors. So it's hard to give a hard rule, you know, on increase by 10%, increase by 20%. So I tend simply to go on, you know, if you want to do some weeks at 10, some weeks at 20, it's fine. If you listen to your body, you feel a bit more tired, then you reduce. But listen to your body basically is the main piece of advice to help prevent injuries. And then other than that is you need to adapt to running because your body will get stronger if you run often. And people tend to get less injured if they run more often, example, 3, 4, 5 times a week versus once or twice a week. So your body will be able to get your muscles stronger, your joints stronger, and all the different structures if you run often. It doesn't mean to run 1 hour every time. It could be one longer run on the weekend. Obviously, it can be 2 or 3 medium runs, 1 speed work session during the week, but you can fit in some quite short sessions in there. And don't hesitate. If you only have 10 or 15 minutes to go for a run, just do it. It's worth it because you get adaptations in your system. So run often, but not necessarily a lot at a time. Third is variety. So I was telling you earlier, just try to vary your surfaces, vary the terrain. Don't run always on a straight line on a flat road with the same shoe. Just try to add more variety in your training. And then next, I like to talk about running technique. So running technique, you know, I have very simple advice is take quicker, shorter steps. And we're talking about cadence or step rate that I'm sure your listeners have heard about. So I like to work between the 170 and the 190 steps per minute as a general guideline. And then you find your own preference within that and run softer. So try to not make a lot of noise when you're running so that there's not much impact going through your body. And then for the shoes, like I said, you know, I like when people develop stronger feet. So for that reason, I like to get people to adapt to more minimalist shoes, although it's never an obligation, but that's one thing that I personally recommend doing. My final piece of advice is strength training. And strength training is obviously good for performance. There's a lot of research on the fact that it helps run faster. There's not much on the fact that it helps reduce injuries. But I think it's still a good thing to do to get your body more tolerant to running.
Okay, that's very, very helpful and very comprehensive. I'm sure listeners will find that quite helpful. Now, in case you get injured, what are some of typically the protocols that you prescribe? I mean, let's just go through, you know, 2 or 3 typical injuries that we see. Let's start with knee pain. How do you I know that knee pain can be caused because of very different reason, often emanating, because of weakness or improper usage of another part of your body. So let's start with knee pain, which, as you said, is in your experience as well, the most common injury that you see in endurance runners.
Yeah, so knee pain, obviously you have different kinds of knee pain, right? And I can give 2 examples of knee pain that I see more often. So the most common one that we actually call runner's knee is also called scientifically patellofemoral pain or kneecap pain. That's when you have pain at the front part of your knee around or behind your kneecap. And that was a topic of my PhD actually. So trying to find the best ways to treat that in runners. And, you know, what we found is actually the best way to treat that is just to manage your training loads. Simply, you know, if, for example, you tell me that you have kneecap pain and then you run 30 kilometers a week, and that's 3 times 10 kilometers. That's what you do typically. Well, I'm going to tell you, you have to run more often, less at a time. So you're going to be running 5 times 6 kilometers instead of 3 times 10. So you split your trainings into more sessions so that each time you're going for a run, you're not overloading your knee. So that's one thing. And then I'll also tell you, just decrease your running speed a little bit. And that means if you are running usually 5 minutes per kilometer, I'll tell you run 5 minutes, 30 seconds per kilometer. It's not a huge decrease, but still a bit of a decrease on that speed is going to reduce forces going through your knee. And then avoid the downhill on the short term. And I like to tell people, you know, just listen to your level of pain. If you get 2 out of 10 of pain, so just a bit of pain during your run, it's fine, as long as it's back to pre-running level within an hour after. So that means that even if you have a bit of pain during, you're not overloading your system. And then you can add other stuff to this, but that's my main part, right? You can add exercises to strengthen your legs, mostly your hips and your thigh muscles. And for the running part of thing, running technique and shoes, obviously bringing your cadence higher will also help to reduce forces at your knee. Running softer with less impact is very helpful too. And for the shoes, it can seem counterintuitive, but more cushioning equals more impact at your knee. So I hear that a lot where people say, you know, I went to a store, I said I had knee pain, and they said, oh, you need more cushioning. But there's a ton of research now showing that if you have more cushioning, you actually have more forces going to your knee when you run. So I don't recommend that people go to more cushioning. I recommend that they go to less cushioning. So that's a typical example that I would see. And, you know, in older runners, they would, for example, get osteoarthritis of the knee. And in which case I would give them all the same advice, but I will tell them one more thing is no swelling in your knee when you're going for a run or when you're coming back. And you know, I manage runners a lot like that, a lot in terms of training load management, and then you can add other stuff to that.
Okay, so that covers knee pain. What about another one, which is quite common, which is plantar fasciitis?
Yeah, plantar fasciitis that we used to call fasciitis, but now we found out that, you know, in a lot of times there's no inflammation in there. So it kind of evolved to plantar fasciopathy. And okay. Then lately it's been renamed plantar heel pain. That's it, right? And the reason why I'm saying that is so that listeners realize that there's not necessarily inflammation in there, right? And you know, a lot of people tend to take anti-inflammatory pills when they're told that they have plantar fasciitis, but in fact, a lot of times there's no inflammation, so there's no point in taking that. That's one thing. Otherwise, I have kind of the same components for training load management, in which I will reduce their running speed. I'll tell them to run more often, less at a time. And I'll tell them that the most important indicator of progress is how you feel in the morning. So let's say you go for a run today, you ran 6 kilometers, and tomorrow morning when you get up, how many steps does it take you when you get out of bed to get rid of that stiffness under your foot? And I'm sure listeners who have or who have had plantar fasciopathy or plantar heel pain know exactly what I'm talking about. It's very stiff in the morning. So if it decreases versus the day before, or if it's stable, it means you did not overload your foot. If you have more stiffness, it means you did too much. So you need to adjust your training loads to make sure that you're not overloading it. Otherwise, it's just never going to go away. And then you can add exercises to that. For the shoes, it would be a bit different in terms of recommendation. If you know you have plantar heel pain that started 2 days ago or 1 week ago, you need to protect your foot, right? And protecting your foot means having more cushioning. But are you going to stay with more cushioning forever? The answer is hopefully not. Okay. Right? And I think that's a question you had too, Raj, where you're asking, you know, you're asking about support earlier. Do we need support? The answer is yes. If you are injured to your foot, you need support, but you don't need to keep it for the rest of your life. Once you feel better, you start weaning it off. And then you make your foot stronger again, and you just go back to your normal.
Okay, so that's excellent. And now coming to a couple of lower leg injuries, which again is quite common among runners, calf injuries and Achilles injuries. How do you deal with each of them?
Calf injuries and Achilles injuries are managed a lot similarly to the plantar heel pain, I would say, the way I treat them, at least. There's another piece that's important for the training load management is to avoid the hills, right? So if you're doing lots of uphill, you're running on the trails, you're running on hilly terrain, you're loading your Achilles tendon a lot, and you're loading your calf muscle a lot. So you might want to reduce that in the short term. But obviously, you're going to go back to doing those at some point. If it's a calf, like a muscle injury, exercises to make it stronger are very important to rehabilitate your muscle. And if it's an Achilles tendon, there's some picky things that, you know, we look at depending on where it is on the Achilles tendon. If it's the attachment on the bone versus the middle part of the tendon, and I won't go into too much detail on that, but there's specific pieces of advice that can be different. So if that's your case, then I suggest that you probably see someone who can give you personalized advice on that.
Okay. No, that's quite helpful. So before we let you go, JF, one thing I like to ask all my guests is some recommendations, whether it be some books or blogs or other podcasts or YouTube channels that you recommend to listeners from a running, fitness, injury prevention, any of those aspects.
Yeah, well, I'll be biased. Obviously, the main resource I'll recommend listeners to look at is the Running Clinic. Running Clinic, right? It's our organization. We have a website, therunningclinic.com. And I'll just mention, because we've been talking about shoes, and I should have said that earlier, but at the Running Clinic, we have no conflict of interest and no bias at all, meaning that we don't receive any money from any company. And that allows us to tell whatever we want to say. And we're pretty happy with that. So all the resources that you'll find on the Running Clinic's website, we have no conflict of interest. So you'll find recommendations on shoes. You'll find a listing of different shoes. We have, we kind of talked about the spectrum of minimalist to maximalist. We have also the Minimalist Index, which is a scientifically validated tool to rate the different kinds of shoes to tell you how minimalist they are. It's a percentage score. So we have hundreds of models of shoes that are listed with the Minimalist Index. And that can be helpful to know, how much time should I take to transition from one shoe to another? So I suggest that you have a look at that. There's a lot of resources, videos of exercises, tapings, advice on training, modification, and whatnot. We're going to be launching soon a book in English. It's launched in French. It's going to be out soon in English, the Running Clinic's book, a fantastic resource for runners. It's a science-based book with 50 experts from around the world who contributed with, short one or two pages on their expertise. And you'll find a lot of information on that. Otherwise, in terms of external resources, you talked about Brody earlier, Brody Sharp, but your listeners probably know him already. So maybe I'll mention another resource, which is a Run Chat Live podcast. Maybe that you know, Raj. So Run Chat Live is with Matt Phillips, who is an athletic therapist based in the UK. And he's doing a great job, a great podcast, a great even running event once a year. They organize that now where it's just an event where runners can register or healthcare professionals, and they can learn about specific topics on running.
Okay, excellent. I will obviously link in my show notes to all of this. What's going to be the name of your, the name of the Running Clinic book?
The Running Clinic. It's called, it's called The Running Clinic. Yeah, yeah. Good question.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fine. And if listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
They can follow me on Twitter if they want to, you know, if they want to stay up to date on the new stuff that's coming out on running. You can follow me on Twitter at JF Esculier, and we can post that as well on the show notes if you want, Raj. Yep. And, you know, you can follow the Running Clinic in general. So that's our Facebook channels and Twitter as well. So you can look us up on Facebook, The Running Clinic. And for myself, you know, if you tweet and you tag me on it, I'll be happy to get involved with the subject of running.
Okay, thanks a lot. I will include all of this in the show notes. So JF, thanks a lot for taking this time. This has been a very different sort of interview and podcast. We have covered topics which hitherto we have not talked about on this show. So thanks a lot for that. I'm sure listeners will find it very, very helpful. Thanks much.
My pleasure, Raj. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much to all the listeners. Please check out the podcast website, runfitraj.com. That is runfitraj.com. It has all the podcasts, it has all the show notes, and there is a very useful search function as well. You can reach out to me on my social media handles, which are Running and Fitness with Raj on both Instagram and Facebook. And you can also email me on runningandfitnesswithraj@gmail.com. Please let me know if you have any questions or specific guests you would like to see on the show. I also request you all again to please subscribe to the podcast and spread the word. Please also leave a review on iTunes, as it will help enormously to grow the show. We will continue to bring you exciting and interesting guests and give specific and actionable advice. Stay safe, stay healthy. Until the next show, goodbye.